Yes. Welcome to another episode of the Finnish Football Show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Wiltshire from the Explore Finland radio show podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my two co-hosts. Currently at the top of the screen, as we're looking at it, is Mark from FC Suomi.
Hello.
Hi, Mark. And down at the bottom, because he joined a minute or two later, is Rich from escapetosuomi.com.
Hello.
And already you're doing the hands. So those that are watching live, first of all, you can see on the screen in the bottom of each box, little hands. If you like what we're saying, give us some props. Use the hands. Thank you very much, whoever that was. Or are we giving each other props at the moment? Okay, fair enough. That's a good way to start. Last time, it all went horribly in the favour of Mark, and he ran away with it. So let's try not for him to be the favourite again this week. This is episode 5 of the Finnish Football Show, where we ask, is this the worst time to have started a podcast about Finnish football? Having watched some of the games recently, I was beginning to think that. So when Mark came up with that idea for a title, I was quite pleased to go along with it. We want your input. So those of you that are watching live, you can see on the right-hand side of the screen is the message bar. If you've got any comments to make, by all means, make your comments in there. If you've got, and also if you're listening to the podcast afterwards, then use social media to get in touch with us. You'll find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Explore Finland. Mark is at FC Suomi, and Rich is at Escape to Suomi. So all fairly straightforward to find us. If you're watching live, remember, if you do slash and Q before you ask a question, it will pop the question up on the left-hand side of the screen. Or you can use the hashtag FFS5. And I think, as normal, Rich is probably going to keep an eye on Twitter. If you've got something to say, bring it on. Bring it to us. And also remember, just hang around at the end of the show. We normally have a little bit of off the record where we decompress, come down slowly after the buzz of the show, and have a little bit of a chat. So if you want to hang around for that, feel free. And the podcast will be coming in a couple of days. So keep your ears out, and we'll make sure we share that on social media when it comes there. I just wanted to say before we start, thanks to Huck and to Keke for the recordings they did. In between this show and the previous show, we also put out a podcast which we brilliantly titled The Finnish Football Shorts, some shorter articles about Finnish football. And Keke and Huck both wrote articles and then read them. And we put that out as a separate podcast. And I'm quite keen, quite happy to do a bit more of that. So if any of you listening live on the podcast or whatever have got something to say and you want to say it into a microphone, then why not get in touch with us and let us know you've got something, and we can arrange how we get that file and what we do with it. And I think last time we had two articles on the same subject. Doesn't have to be the same subject. It can be two or three. It depends if how much stuff comes through. We're quite easy. So it just helps us keep putting a few more shows out and means that me, Mark and Rich don't have to do quite all the work.
Which we don't mind doing because we love it.
We do love it. And I just wanted to say welcome to Julian, who's a friend of mine here in Seinäjoki, who's joined us for the first time. He joined Blab for the first time. So big kiss to you, Jules. Before we go any further, just a couple of reminders to you, Rich. I've got a list here. No F-bombs.
Yeah.
No biscuits. And no upsetting Juha Malinen, if you can get away with it in the next hour. And I'm sure.
Please, no. I've got a 2-kilo tub of Haribo that will keep me going. So.
That's good. It's good. Less noise.
And I get a feeling that we're probably going to add to the list of things that Rich shouldn't do as each week goes by. So this will get longer and longer.
It's good.
I've got one to add. I think we have to watch out on his name dropping, because he's offended basically half of the Veikkausliiga now. So it's really easy for him to like mix up his celebrity status.
Like a keyboard warrior. Yeah.
Should we talk about that a little bit later in the show?
Yeah, go on.
Go through Rich's indiscretions in a little bit more detail later on.
That needs a whole separate podcast.
Called What Rich Did.
Quite serial.
So maybe that could be the next Finnish Football Shorts, Mark, is just that me and you can read out the transcript of Rich's arguments on Twitter with people from the Veikkausliiga.
Sounds good.
Okay, so on with FFS 5. Is this the worst time to have started a podcast about Finnish football? And we're going to approach this in a few different stages. Firstly, as normal, we'll do some news, and I'm sure that news will cover some of the less happy, less positive things that have been going on recently. Then we will touch on the recent international friendlies that we enjoyed. And then finally, we'll look at the Veikkaus Liiga 2016. There's been a few games played already in last weekend, and we'll look forward to what we think is coming up for the rest of the season, whatever we can glean from the first few games. So, first of all, why don't we do some news? I've talked enough. I'm going to go first to Rich. What's the news story that's caught your eye most recently?
Well, it came up last week, and again, it was something that I was inadvertently involved in. Antti Okkonen, the Rops captain, was injured in their cup win over Hercules last week. It was an 8-0 victory for Rops, pretty straightforward cup win. But Okkonen had his leg broken as a result of a rather serious but late challenge. Now, obviously this came out, it was a bad 8-0 win, if you can call it that. The next day, one of the PS Kemi players who'd played them in a friendly the week before said it was essentially karma for a number of rash challenges that he'd put in on, that Okkonen had put in on the game. And one of his teammates then jumped in and shared a newspaper photograph of a challenge that Okkonen did on one of his teammates, which looked just as serious from the photograph, but didn't result in any injury. Needless to say, because I was copied in on the tweets, because they were replies to my initial picture of his leg being broken, because that's the sort of thing I do. The players involved decided to tweet a little bit, and a few Rops fans got some rather tasty replies. Eventually the club, PS Kemi, apologised on their players' behalves, and the players themselves fell on their sword and gave a very forced apology.
Almost identical apologies.
They were, yeah. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, everyone's human at the end of the day, but it was a nasty challenge and a nasty injury. The player who caused the injury did come out and apologise, which, you know, fair enough. Apparently, it was even Juha Malinen and said it was just over exuberance rather than any malice as such. They all got a little bit too het up, but yeah, that went a little bit crazy for that day or so.
It's a bad challenge, though.
Oh,
yeah. He went through the back of him.
Yeah,
he basically took everything. But I don't even know if he got the ball at the end of it. But he absolutely smashed through everything. I mean, Antti Okkonen's that kind of player. Like, he mixes it up himself and he does throw it around when he's in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
But you can't wish, you can't go around wishing, like, nobody deserves a broken leg.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, he's now going to be struggling to make any appearances for the rest of the season. It's, you know, his tibia and his fibula both broken. And, you know, with only a 6.5 month season, he's, you know, he's going to be a big miss, especially with the players they've lost over the summer. Winter.
Off-season.
Yes.
And it was actually a couple of British players that were getting involved in the arguments afterwards.
Yeah, some of the jokes, again, I referred to in previous podcasts about your mum being the sort of extent of the intellectualism around the insults. I guess sometimes, you know, my involvement in lower league English football, you kind of, it happens, it gets done. And the thing with social media is, you know, it doesn't take long for these things to get jumped on, especially if you're a player or a top division club, you know, bad taste and everything. But, you know, they've apologised, they've deleted the tweets, and we'll see what sort of reception they get when they play in Rovaniemi.
Yeah, that could be interesting. We'll get the old subscription TV channel fired up for that one, I think. So, Mark, what was your... Well, actually, you had so many news items that I put two down in the list. So, by all means... And what you normally do at this point is say, yeah, something else has just happened in the last 5 minutes.
something else has happened in the last 5 minutes. I don't know if it's our sort of like karmic timing, but Asiko just went through in the Swarming Cup on penalties against PS Kemi. So it was 0-0 after 90 minutes. They went 1-0 down and then Ryöpy Riski equalized. They went to penalties. And I think it even went to sudden death. And it was Younes Rahimi who missed the penalty in the Liga Cup final, was the one who scored the winning spot kick. So SCK went through, PS Kemi went out. In Poland, Lech Poznan just went through. Paweł Zauriuri just played 90 minutes to get them through to the final of the Polish Cup. So they're going to go and play probably Legia Warsaw, who were 4-0 up in the first leg of the semi-final. So it'll be Kasper Hamalainen against Lech Poznan in the Polish Cup final this season as well. So that's a pretty tasty update. I mean, the news story that did catch my eye, like before all that, was the Palolito chairmanship, which comes up. They vote on it in Tampere on the 23rd and the 24th of April, so 2-3 weeks from now. And as far as it looks at the minute, Pertti Alaja is unopposed, running for the head of the chairman of the Finnish FA, which I have to say, after the kind of, he's been in the post since Sauli Niinistö, so since 2012, and in that time, I think I have to say that again, like as I think as we'll get onto later, even by Finnish standards, we've gone down and we've regressed to such an extent that you have to ask really what the kind of the leadership is all about and what the direction is of the Palolito. Hans Backer's appointment looks a bit not suspicious, but it looks really unambitious is probably the best word for it. He stuck by Miksu when everybody else realized that Miksu was going nowhere. And then he stuck the boot into Miksu like when the results stopped coming. So he kind of didn't act, but didn't support the team. And I think all around, it's just a bit, for Finland to progress, something we need to kind of have a big plan, and we need to really be smart because we don't have the resources of other nations. So we need to have a good leadership.
It's funny.
And I don't think.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Ari Lahti, the owner of Coops, he's apparently being sort of almost pushed forward as a candidate on behalf of the Veikkausliiga clubs, which seems a little bit like they're looking after their own interests, if nothing else.
I mean, the thing is, Ari Lahti's he's one of those guys that's got a good track record in business with Ice Capital, so he's done management, he's done administration, he's done organizational development, he's made money. Coops, they're not having a great time, as again we'll get into later. But they've been in the Veikkausliiga for, I don't know, 10 years, something like that. They're a stable Veikkausliiga team. And he knows that the efforts of the Palolito at the minute don't stretch to make, like they don't, they're not thinking in the Palolito about how clubs are going to make money, how players are going to develop, how the national team is going to progress. And that's exactly kind of what they should be thinking about. That's exactly what a progressive football association needs to do. That's what other football associations are doing. And that's why Finland is getting left behind. So, I like Ari Lahti. And I think the other one was Olli Rehn, who's a proper politician, used to play for Mikkelin Palloliat back in the 70s. So there's two sort of candidates out there, but there's no one really willing to kind of step up and take it, which is sad, I think, because it's the leadership of football. It's the guy that basically says Hans Backer is doing a good job or a bad job, and you think all of the hassle that we had over Miksu about finances and about all the other kind of sob stories, and then when he went and put it to an open application. The post for the Finnish manager's job, and then when you find out that guys like Lippi, like Stuart Pearce, had applied to the job, had actually gone through the sort of weird process in football of sending your CV, which just doesn't happen in football, to a Finnish football decision, and then not even be considered or taken forward. I think that's a real, I don't know, it's a real deficiency at the top.
And we'll come on in a minute, I think, to how that managerial decision has has manifested itself in the last few months. And both
get,
of those,
get the bleep machine ready.
I haven't yet needed to bleep anyone, but that, this might be a time where the editing. I'm going to pass the editing back to you. I think, Mark, you can edit your own indiscretions. Both of those stories were very interesting. Neither of them were what I actually had on the agenda. So well done, you've done it again, and you've done it as a double whammy this week. My story that I just wanted to sort of throw into the arena is this idea of a kind of Nordic hosted Euro 2024 competition, which it seems, I mean, I know that in 2020 it's going to be hosted by, I mean, every country is basically going to be playing home games pretty much. It's been spread around so far. But it seems that each competition, there's more and more and more countries getting involved in hosting these games. And when you look at England makes a bid, and then they say, well, we, you know, some games could be played in Scotland or in Wales or whatever. And you think, okay, geographically, they're fairly close together and easy to get to. It's still spreading it out over many, many countries, but still. Then you look at the Nordics and the idea that it would be mainly maybe Sweden plus Norway or Denmark co-hosting it, and then games being played also in the other one of Norway and Denmark, maybe in Helsinki, maybe in Iceland, and, you know, really spreading it a long way geographically. And who's the host? I mean, how big does the competition have to get just to fit in all the host countries into the draw?
Well, I mean, in that kind of setup, you can't expect five teams to qualify automatically. So, you know, for a fact, Finland's not going to be one of them. You know what I mean?
and also, there's only really one stadium in Finland that could hold a game of that size, I guess, which is the Olympic Stadium in Helsinki.
And even when that's done up, that's not going to be big enough to hold, say, the final. It might might be for group stages and maybe a first knockout round, but that UEFA do have some quite strict rules about capacities. And that's why 2020, they've already said the final and semis are at Wembley. And that was on the proviso that England would then support Germany's bid to host 2024. But now their talk of how they got rights to the 2006 World Cup is now starting to come out of the woodwork. They're now slowly moving back again. So it's a long way to go.
And I don't want to link it too much to my own news piece, but Pertti Alaja was linked with the Scandinavian bid that was put forward for Euro 2008. And if you go back to I haven't looked at it like in full detail, but if you go back to that proposal, and that was a proposal that Finland, Sweden and Denmark only would host Euro 2008, the proposal that they've got this time is pretty much exactly the same. There's no outlay for. I mean, they've only just started the discussions, but there's not going to be any particular big investment in infrastructure. There's no way you can have like 30,000-40,000 seater stadiums like across Scandinavia, because there's only the places that need that kind of stadium have that kind of stadium. There's places that can sustain it. So I think it's a bit of a. It's funny that it comes out just at the time that Alaya and a couple of other association chairmen are going up for re-election.
It would be, I guess it would be, I quite like the idea that, you know, from a selfish point of view, for those of us that are watching this, that are based here in Finland, the idea of being able to hop on a train, the now much less expensive train service that we're being offered here in Finland, popped out.
Much?
Well, I got a 20 euro one way ticket to Helsinki with 3 weeks' notice. So that's not bad. That's not bad going.
That isn't bad.
The Finnish football show, sponsored by VR. that's your plug. There was no plug. There's certainly no
that's
money.
That's how they do it.
We can't even say that other train companies are available.
Well, they will be soon, Rich. That's coming. That's coming. just you wait, Finland, until there's privatised trains. You don't know what's hit you. You complain about the prices on the trains nowadays. You wait till they're privatised. Then you've got some fun and games. but being able to hop down to Helsinki and see the games in the finals of that kind of competition is quite appealing. But it does seem a little bit unfocused when you've got, you know, umpteen different, and obviously I guess Sweden is the biggest country, the biggest population, and probably has more big stadiums and could handle bringing some more online as well. So, you know.
Well, they've hosted a World Cup.
It was a long time ago.
50.
Was it maybe 12 teams in that one?
Yeah, 50. Was it 54?
58, I think, yeah.
58. Oh, yeah, Pelé's first, yeah, that's right.
Okay, Mark, now's the time for you to get very grumpy. Let's move on from the news. Let's talk about those international games.
Okay.
Let's just explain to everyone. We were all obviously watching in our own locations at home and whatever, but the three of us were in touch on WhatsApp, and it was quite good to have somebody to just sort of share the pain with. take it away. Let's talk about the Poland game.
Sharing the pain is a lot what being a Finland fan is all about. Yeah. I mean, that's like 90% of the deal. I mean, Finnish football fans, anybody that's watched Finland for a couple of years knows that, you know, our kind of classic approach is that we get within a small distance of success, close enough just to taste it, and then we shoot ourselves in the foot. Or we throw it away early and then try and build up a response later on when it's too little too late. But the worrying thing about the Poland game was that Poland, they're a good second tier team. So they're not like Germany or Brazil or probably even France. They're probably at the same sort of level as maybe England. And they've had a couple of great results, particularly in qualifying. They beat Germany 2-0 at home. And they're all about energy and attack. I think they have one of the best scoring records in all of the European qualifications. They've built their side basically around Lewandowski, and they've got a lot of players outside of Lewandowski that pose an attacking threat. And all of this was not like a secret before we played them. And when we set up with the 4-4-2 that we went with, we weren't stable. We weren't rigid. We weren't. We didn't close the space. We set up in a way that looked like we were trying to counterattack in almost like a Leicester City type way, and all it did was leave our fullbacks exposed, and the middle of the pitch really vacant. I mean, for the first, I think 10-15 minutes, it looked a couple of times like there were players switching positions in midfield, and it was really worrying. Because you know what you get when you play somebody like Poland. You get high pace, you get flexibility, you get interchanging of positions and short passes, and you get pressing all the time, like high, heavy pressing that's designed to frustrate, that's designed to remove possession, turn over the ball, and then hit you again. And we didn't really see that coming. And it sort of struck me as incredible that it wasn't prepared for, and in particular from wide areas. I mean, the goals that we conceded, I think except for one, they all came from in and around the 6-yard box. And it was from pacey wingers, isolating the fullbacks, getting crosses in, hitting the middle, and then the forwards themselves left with relatively simple first touches. I think the third goal was from the edge of the box. But everything else, it went down the flanks, it came inside. It was all not the same, but similar in terms of defending. If you wanted to stop the attacks, you had to cover the fullbacks. Something we've talked about, I think, one or two times before. And Bakker's approach to the game was just so wrong that by 30 minutes, the whole thing was over. Like as an absolute contest, it was just over. And the players looked around as if to say, "We've gotten this so wrong that I have no idea what to do next." Like, where do I go from here? And where do I, how do we build back into the game? And Poland just, they smelt blood. I mean, that was a bunch of, there was about half the team was the regular team. And there was about three or four players in there that are fringe players looking to secure their place in the Euros in the summer. And those fringe players really stepped up. They really played their A game to try and build the best for themselves. And we just looked like a class apart. An absolute class apart.
And did you see that game as well, Rich? You were there, weren't you?
Yeah, I watched the Poland game. It was just Mark said, Poland flew out of the blocks, and you know, you don't need a game plan when you're playing a Finland team who's set up. There's not a huge amount of difference from I know it's a new era, a new manager and everything, but, you know, and there aren't only so much you can do with those players, but they just seemed to start so slowly that before they knew it, they were 2-0 down, and it was just, they seemed like they didn't really know how to stop the flow and how to impress themselves on the game and how to, you know, the whole skill in controlling a game, which, you know, that needs to come from the players who can do that. Like Spav is probably the best example, but again, stepping up to the next level, he needs to do that on the international stage. But, you know, there were injuries. It's a friendly, I know, but, you know, he needs to start looking. You know, Finland are in a very tough group for the World Cup qualifying, and they've got some very, very tough friendlies coming up. I mean, Poland and Norway, you're moving on to Italy and then the world's number one team in Belgium. It's, you know, and it's going to be a bit of a hiding, really, unless the backers have spent that time working with the players and not just doing almost what Sven-Göran Eriksson did with England, was he watched lots, he picked the ones that impressed in the games that he saw, stick them in, but he needs to see how the whole system works and how getting that identity going.
It's difficult to try and pick the bones out of the attacking game because Poland were so dominant, but it just looked like, I mean, I think you've said previously on the show that Teemu Pukki runs around like a headless chicken or dog on a leash or something like that up top, that he just spends a lot of time running down channels. Against Poland, he didn't spend any time running down channels. He's very immobile. He didn't offer any particular out ball. There wasn't a great deal of quality going over the top for him to look at, but there wasn't the same kind of... So they played a 4-4-2 that was... It wasn't narrow, actually, but they played a 4-4-2 in a similar way that Marko Kanerva played. But when Kanerva played it, they always stayed with inside basically their own 18-yard line. And whenever the fullbacks came out or somebody came out wide to close down, there was someone close to cover the position or to cover the runner to go with him so that he wasn't isolated like they were against Poland. But in those games, Pukki, Pohjanpalo, Kasper Hämäläinen ran around like crazy, trying to get on the end of long balls that were thrown over on relatively regular occasions. It's very simple football, but it can be quite effective. And it did work for Kanerva against, let's face it, weaker opposition. This time round, though, it seemed like whenever we got the ball back, we tried a little bit small interplay, small passing in our own half. And the Poles just loved it. They just went, great, we can live here. We'll just set camp in the Finnish half and try and close them down as quickly as we can. We'll just run our legs off. And without that kind of the ball out over the top and without the runs from Pukki or Pohjanpalo or Hämäläinen, there wasn't any respite. There wasn't. I mean, it went from 1-0 to 3-0 in 15 minutes, and it did that because there was literally no escape for the guys at the back. I mean, you could even go as far as well to say that if you look at... So it was Toivio and Arajuri who played centre-back. Big guys, strong guys, very good in a deep defence, not very good against quick players, not very good on the floor. I mean, not very good, but not the best on the floor. That's not their game. And you just... I sort of scratch my head and I look at it and I think, okay, Moisander got the flu, even though he recovered just in time to get back for Sampdoria. When they came, so Moisander got the flu and he was out, but there wasn't any pace in the centre backs, and you could tell that when the Poles went forward, it was Arajuri, Toivio and Sparv that were in those kind of defensive zones. All three of those are good players, but not one of them has any pace and not one of them has any flexibility, and so there was that's what was missing. That's why we got done like statues over and over again.
And so on to the next game, which was Norway. And did things improve?
No, it was even worse. So the thing about in the Poland game, in the Poland game, we got done 5-0. It could have been 6 or 7. But in fairness, it looked like the whole team got absolutely caught by surprise. In the Norway game, we got done 2-0 by a team that cannot score. They have an incredibly hard time scoring. And not only can they not score, but they had about six attackers that were injured and out for the game. So
now they were in poor, the Norway game. Norway were poor. You could see they were poor as well, and there was.
They are a very poor team, and I mean, so are we, obviously. But the so again, tactically, after being handed his backside to him, Bakker went for a five. Okay, so the press called it a 5-3-2. All the match reports that I saw called it a 5-3-2. The second centre forward was Roman Yeremenko, and there's just no way on God's green earth that he played as a second centre forward. He was at best an attacking midfielder, because when he watched the game, he was always looking for the ball when Finland had it, so he was always dropping deep. I don't know if it was the plan. I don't know if it's just who he is as a player. But he came looking for the ball, and that made a four-man midfield on top of a five-man backline. And against a team that doesn't have a great deal of attacking threat, that is idiotic. Because finally we played a team that didn't have particularly any pace up front, and then we picked three bloody centre-backs to try and combat it. And the goal that we conceded, it was just after halftime. Jo Inge Berget drifted off the back of Toivio, and then in between Toivio and the fullback, which was Ville Jalasto, who hasn't been playing fullback for Hoiko. He's been playing centre back, but it's by the by. That's what happens when you play a back three. The striker usually he goes down the channel looking for that space, looking to blindside the centre back and then come in behind. All three of the centre backs watched the cross that came in, and by the time Ville Jalasto realized that Berget had drafted it into his zone, he couldn't get back in time to stop the tap-in again from inside the six-yard box. So again, we didn't really have... I mean, in the Norway game, I can't think of any... Roman Yeremenko hit the post twice, but I can't think of any other attacking threat that we had. We never had a move. Like, we didn't switch the play well or put in crosses. Bojan Palo, he had a half chance on about 60 minutes when Schuller pinged the ball over the top too long, and he tried to hit it on the volley on the spin from about the edge of the 6 yard box, and did well to get it on target, but it was a very difficult chance for him to control. So for me, that was a lot very quickly. So for me, the Norway game was worse, because we had time to react to the Poland defeat, look at the opponents, and then pick a way to play. And we picked a way to play and a plan for the Poland game and not for the Norway game that was coming up. So in a weird way, if Bakker had have played 5-4-1 against Poland and 4-4-2 against Norway, we might have seen more joy. We certainly wouldn't have probably got thumped 5-1 or 5-0, sorry. But the Poland game it really hurt, because... Just because the selection didn't seem right, we didn't even try to get a win. It looked like Bakke was going for a 0-0 draw in Norway.
Yeah, I must admit, Rich had an excuse for not making that game, didn't you, Rich?
Yeah, I was at a breastfeeding class, and I could make some joke about. Yeah, it would sound like a carry-on film, but I was sort of following it. And
I think we're writing our own jokes now. I'm kidding myself.
I mean, you know, you're not asking for much playing away to Norway. I know the attendance was poor, and there was various media stories about why they're even playing Finland. They're not a box office draw, this, that, and the other. You know, if you play Norway, you're looking for more of a system, more of a learn your players, learn a different style of play to say away to Poland. But, you know, like you say, you've pretty much come out of it feeling worse, because you've lost a game that, you know, I'm sure Finland going to Poland, yeah, you're not going to expect to get a win if they beat Germany a year ago. But to go to Norway and struggle to concede anything, to struggle to create anything, to concede silly goals. And, you know, when that comes out, and, you know, that's four games now, and the first two, the friendlies in the Middle East, you never had four games, 11 goals conceded, no goals scored. It's, you know, it's a win percentage of zero. You know, and we're not even coming out of it going, well, at least he bloodied these players, or he's looking like he's trying something new. you know, he's struggling to identify which players go in which position. We sort of mentioned before him about Thomas Lahm. You know, he doesn't even know where he plays at club level, and he's still picking players on name or on the clubs they're linked with, or the, you know, it's just...
Actually, Rick, that touches on something that was supposed to be one of Mark's news stories, which was this thing about Bakker and Lahm and the position he was playing.
So, I mean, as I said, in the Poland game, we had it was Ara Juri Toivio, and Sparv was your kind of defensive or your covering midfielder. Thomas Lahm has pace. He's a young guy, and he's very good on the ball. He's got very quick feet. I mean, he is a very, very good footballer who could be incredible. And I can understand why Bakke thinks he's a midfielder, because he's one of the best footballers with the ball at his feet in the Finnish squad. But he has been playing centre-back for Zwolle all year, and he's been doing a very, very good job. And I think he's 20. Is he 20 or 21? Something like that.
Yeah.
So the guy that could have helped him was right there. And I think this is the big question about Bakke and about the Finnish management, because the question is, does he see Thomas Lahm playing for Zwolle? So, and they've played, by the way, 22 games this season so far. They're fifth in Eredivisie. It's not a good team. He's doing very well. So does he look at that and see Lahm playing centre back and think, I know better than that manager? I'll wait for him in midfield. Or does he not look at him at all? Because I can't understand why he's not there, particularly in a back three. I mean, like, so as mad and as crazy as the back three is, you've then still picked a back three of essentially the same player. Like, Valtteri Morin is younger than Toivio and Ara Juri, but he is a big unit, very good in the air, not very good on the floor, not particularly quick, doesn't turn well. But he is a good defender. He's playing well for Vaslant Beveren in Belgium. But, I mean, if you have the luxury of playing a back three, surely one of those should be able to bring the ball out. Surely one of those should be able to hit a pass 20, 30 yards. Surely one of those should have pace.
And it seems to me that even if Lahm is a decent midfielder, if he's not really playing there all season, he's going to feel more comfortable or more accustomed to playing at the back.
Yeah. It's true. Particularly against the type of guys that he faces on a weekly basis in the Dutch league. I mean, Berget plays for Malmo, so in the Swedish leagues, it's a similar level to the Eredivisie. It's probably actually a lower level than the Eredivisie. So you've got to back Lahm to beat a guy like that, because he does so on a weekly basis domestically, and I think that's the bit that is the most frustrating at all, because I look at it and I think it's like he's playing Champ Manager or something like that. You know, he doesn't seem any more informed. Oh, of course. Sorry. Big thing. So the update to the squad, Jukka Raitala was added to the squad because he tried to get Brian Hammerleinen from Denmark, the Danish guy, to come up because he's got a grandmother that's Finnish, and Hammerleinen refused because he feels Danish. Jukka Raitala got added. The other player that was added to the squad at the last minute was Tim Vauranen. Tim Vauranen has played 9 times in the German third division this season. He scored once. Wait a minute. He scored once in July this year, right?
Last year.
And he was called up. He's called up to the national team. And when it hit the fan and we went 2-0 down, Vauranen was brought on. Number 9 is back. Tim Vauranen, bang. Right. Here is a list of things that have happened since Tim Vauranen scored his last goal competitively. Rybiryski scored 8 and 11 and won the Veikkausliiga. In addition, he scored 4 in the Liga Cup and got the silver medal. Eero Markkanen moved clubs twice, right? He won the silver medal at Rops and he went to the quarterfinals in the Svenska Cup with AIK. Mika Vauranen, no relation, scored for LA Galaxy in the CONCACAF Champions League. Timo Furuholm scored 3 in the same league that Vauranen is in, where he only scored 1, then got injured for 6 months and came back, started to play again. Jesse Jarinen scored his goal from like 70 yards. Riku Riski played for Rosenborg, IFK Gothenburg, Dundee United, and Rosenborg again, right? Before Tim Vauranen got the call up. And it's like, actually, Palvas probably, he scored, Aksipava scored 9. Boris Koko scored 7. Juha Mäkelä scored 6. So how Tim Väyrynen gets a call up is bleep machine beyond me. Right? I understand that Tim Väyrynen is a good player, but the truth is he probably needs to go to another club where he'll get games, score goals, play regularly. But there are so many things that have happened for other players so well. Rupert Riski put the title on a plate. He must be sitting at home thinking, man, that German third division, I need to get myself on the bench in that division because that's how I'm going to get into the national team. And you think... Sorry, I'm going
and
to
it
have
kind
to.
Of, and it kind of touches on what you and that's a rant. That's a beautiful
Sorry.
Rant.
Sorry.
Five episodes to get that, yeah, that kind of flow
I don't
goes.
Want... So I don't want, like, I like Tim Väyrynen. I think he's a good footballer. I think he's a good striker. It's not about Tim. It's about his selection for the national team. You can't play nine, you can't have 9 substitute appearances in the German third league and then be in the Finland squad. I mean, you could if there was nobody else, but there are other players. There are other players scoring goals, playing games, doing better. And I mean, I've hit on Eero Markkanen, not hit on him. I've hit on Eero Markkanen. Just drunk.
Hey, he's 2016, Mark. Anything goes.
Yeah, but so I've laid into Eero Markkanen for his Real Madrid move and all the other stuff. But he went to Robs, played games, scored goal, got second, helped the team, went to AIK. He's playing regularly. So you know he's done. He's there. He's done stuff. It's not like he's not great, but it's more than Tim Väyrynen has done. Like I said, I want Tim Väyrynen to be a very good player. I think he can be a very good player, but I don't see why he's in the national team right now.
And Mark's paused to breathe, and so I think we should take. He looks exhausted. Those of them listening on the podcast can't see it, but he looks exhausted. And I think that's a perfect place to leave the international friendlies before we lose one of the 3 co-hosts of this show. This is supposed to be the break for questions, and those that are watching live have not come up with the goods with regards to questions.
I think people are busy at being Finland watching the Barcelona game that's just kicked off.
Why would anybody choose Barcelona
over us?
This is Champions League. We are the Beza Holmes League. It's
Beza Holmes League.
Blast from the past.
That's a reference that was not gonna go down, not gonna mean much to those watching the show now. So let's perhaps move on. We move on to the Veikkausliiga, and maybe now, Rich, this is where we start to get a little bit more from you, and let Mark get his blood pressure down. You know, so far there's been, I think, 3 Veikkausliiga fixtures and actually 2 games played out of those 3, so that's not the best start to the season. We started with Hoyko 2, Mariehamn 0, and then PK35, Vanta 3, Rops 4, and then on Saturday the Inter and Asikor game was postponed because the pitch down in Turku wasn't ready. What can we learn from those games so far? Anything?
I think certainly from the Hoyko game, that was, it's a almost like a very standard home win for them. They're blooding some new players in. They played quite well, to be honest. Mariehamn didn't, you know, I'll be honest, didn't really turn up. You know, Hoyko had several chances before they took the lead, and somehow Atan Tanaka, who makes me look like a giant, managed to leap and head home the first. And then Mikhail Forsell, on his 3rd spell at the club now, he came on in a incorrectly spelt shirt and set up the 2nd. It's interesting because Tanaka was, you know, Hoyko was probably their best forward player last year, which isn't saying an awful lot, but, you know, he was in and out of games, but he did score goals. He's open with 2 this time. Their new signing from AC Milan, Odu, played on the left wing, and he looked quite good. You know, he was quick, he hit the bar. as I said on the WhatsApp group earlier, his transfer, his whole contractual situation at Milan is quite strange because he's 25 years old. He's been at Milan for 6 or 7 years. He made one substitute appearance in 2010, and he's had, I think this is his seventh loan spell, and the game on Saturday was his first competitive fixture in nearly a year. But he looked quite good. He's a Nigerian international. He scored in the Confederations Cup a couple of years ago in Brazil. So he's obviously got some talent. And, you know, if he gets a run of games in Veikkausliiga, you know, fair play, it's a good spot. But, yeah, it's, you know, we talked about Forsell as well. He's coming back. You know, he's 35 now, but he's still going to bring that experience, a bit of the mentality of playing at a higher level, and especially Hoyikoa trying to blood youngsters more in defence, to be honest, but just having that sort of figure at the club. You know, he's not going to start many games, but he will figure and he will be important for the club as a whole.
And he will score goals.
Yes, he will. Yeah,
that's, I mean, Hoyikoa last year, that's, I mean, one of the areas that they struggled the most. Hmm.
And also, I noticed also that Hoyikoa play again on Saturday, so they could be kind of 6 points clear of most of the pack, you know, before some of the others even laced up their boots.
It's actually Friday.
Is it Friday?
It's Friday night, yeah.
Home to Vepsu. So, yeah, they could open a healthy lead over the other teams who haven't played yet.
If they're playing Vepsu on Friday, they probably will be 6 points clear come Saturday morning.
I think a nice home game for them to on a Friday to get the weekend out of the way. But, you know, they don't want to draw too much inference into that. When it comes to playing Asikor or even Rops, that's when we'll start judging them, really. But, decent 2-0 win. And that was merely a starter for the second match of the day, which was PK 35-3, Rops 4. And I watched the first half when I was at work. I was very impressed with Banta. They, you know, in pre-season, we've always said they will score goals. They've got quality centre-forwards. They've got Nyazi Kuchi, they've got Pablo Cunago. They will score goals, but we've also seen that Rops team, who've lost so many key players, turn around in the second half and scored 4. Villis Axman was excellent. Boris Kocko got the winner. And, you know, it's if this is going to be like the entertainers of the season.
They absolutely lost the plot. PK 35 and this. I mean, when the 3-1 goal went in, they crowded around the referee. They started like it was a bit of argy bargy on the pitch, and you just sort of thought, it's 3-1. Just get it together. You know what I mean? Just play 10 minutes, 5 minutes. You know, keep ball. Just keep them at arm's length. And they went for it, and they got done in a really weird kind of naive way.
Yeah, and it's a game management issue as well, where, you know, they've scored 3 goals in the first half of their first Veikkausliiga game, and all of a sudden it's, my God, what do we do? And we've seen in the pre-season games and last season where if results don't, or if things don't go their way on the pitch, they do get quite flaky. They do surround the ref. They do get narky.
Yeah.
And their previous cup game against Kutepe. That was at the Palo Lito fines office yesterday, and yeah. That all got sorted out because of some fisticuffs at the end of that match. And it's going to be fun, I think, if they keep it up. I know Henry did a predictions thing with Mark and a couple of other guys, and most of them said they were most looking forward to seeing PK 35 and what they get up to this year. It's, to be honest, it's nice that it takes the spotlight off the coach, because, you know, he's high profile enough, but these players are a number of individuals who have very good and very bad qualities, and it should be entertaining, because we see a lot of games that are low scoring, and to have 7 in one game, you know, it's a nice treat. And it sort of demonstrated what we've been saying all along, that They are they're like the Newcastle of the 90s. So, and good attendance as well, let me say.
Yeah, I think as well, I just wanted to say that Nyaji Kuchi is old and he's big and he has that, he's got that knack of just sort of scoring goals. He looks like he's doing nothing for about 5-10 minutes, or well, 85 minutes. I was going to say 5-10, but for 85 minutes, and he can score goals. And I don't advise or encourage anybody to make any financial investments in probable outcomes or betting, but he's not a bad shout as a dark horse for Golden Boot, because he's going to get goals in a regular intervals for PK35, because they make chances, they play to his strengths, absolutely.
But I think we've seen sort of last year as well, you know, an older, more experienced centre forward in a team in the sort of mid to lower range of the table. Yeah, he'll get a lot of goals. I mean, Juha Mäkelä scored, was it 18 last year, was it?
16, I think he got.
16. And, you know, players like that, they may not contribute to the wider scheme of things, but they'll get on the end of things. And, it's very... I think that they'll be good fun to watch.
And how about previewing the season? That's what we've got so far. We've had two games, one postponement, some interesting ideas.
But I mean, go on, Rich. You've read all of our predictions and you've sat on the sidelines now long enough. Who's going down?
Well, funny, everyone sort of mentions it was Ilves and VPS were the ones who generally got the vibe that they'd struggle. I would like to see a bit more of Kemi. I'm not sure they've had a lot of personnel changes. But, you know, some of the other teams in the sort of middle of the table have actually strengthened relatively well. I think, Inter Turku look good other than up front. I think I'm not sure how they're going to score too many of their goals, but they're looking more solid. FC Lahti look like they're signing Mika Vaarinen, and that'll be a very interesting one. I think, again, it's someone who brings experience and quality to that team. They've got players, they'll score goals. Again, they may not be as exciting or as sort of crazy to watch, but yeah, I think they'll do well.
Sorry,
go on, Mark.
I was going to say, you mentioned Inter and them, like for the last like 5 or 6 years. I first moved to Finland about a decade ago, something like that. The Helsinki Turku rivalry was one of the kind of one of my favorite things from the time when I moved. But in the last like 5 or 6 years, Inter Turku, I've been really like bland. Upset with, because it seems whatever happens, they're going to finish like fourth or fifth, you know, like in that sort of kind of close, almost sort of there, but not really. And if there's a player that's exciting, if there's a player that can do something, they're going to sell him like they're almost too well connected. And that's the thing that it bugs me. And they have it, Yusuf saying online as well, that they have a very good or a decent squad this year. They can absolutely challenge. I guarantee by the time we get to about August or September, when the kind of regular European leagues kick off again, they'll be selling two or three players and dropping down back into mediocrity. They'll mount, as they do always, a kind of a decent challenge. They'll be second, third by the time we get to the midsummer break, and it'll trail off.
It'll be interesting to see. This is almost certainly Dragsma's last season in charge.
Yeah,
they've said they're not going to, or he probably won't renew a contract, or they might not offer him one. But he's been there since 2007, I think. And you know, other than they won the title, when was that? That was 8 years ago.
Yeah.
They've done okay, but again, it's that sort of mediocrity enough to finish in the top half. But I think next season's when we'll see some, we might see some change there.
I hope so. I mean, they do have the kind of sense of a huge feeder, as a very good feeder club somehow. Maybe that's a bit harsh. Maybe that's a bit too much. But they could have gone on and done a lot more in the last couple of years. If they'd have tried to keep the players, But I always wish them well, because I always think they've got the, with the Veritas Stadium and with the fans that they've got, you know, it's, Turku's a great place. It's a brilliant place when the football's good. But I don't know, somehow it seems a bit flat at the minute.
It's interesting that we've started to preview the season with who's going to finish fourth or fifth. Most shows would start with who's gonna finish top or who might come bottom. So that's nothing like breaking with traditions.
Well, we can move on to that. I mean, I think we've got two teams who do look a cut above. Depending on how Atletico start, it's, you know, they've, it took them penalty shootout to get past Kemi in the cup today. They got to the Liga Cup final, obviously the champions, and they have, I'd say they've strengthened. But until they actually get into league fixtures, actually get into a rhythm, I would put them as very slight favourites in my book. I think they've got the spine, the settled team, and they've added quality where they needed to, and they've kept Will Perisky. If he carries on as he has been, I mean, I think he'll be the difference for them.
He got the goal tonight.
Yeah, he did.
And they went down in extra time as well. I think he got 116 minutes, something like that, when the kind of time when you have to get the goal.
And it was just after they conceded as well. They basically went up the other end.
I just saw that you tweeted, Mark, that one of the hosts of the show is a little bit worried about this season. And this kind of last-minute winner, last-minute equaliser thing, it's not good. Not good for the nerves. And I know that Huck, who's not with us today but who will be listening to the podcast, has made the comment a few times about the midfield. And we've got probably two good quality midfields, and you can't squeeze them all into one team. And yet, up front, apart from Risky, it does look a little bit like something's not quite there. Maybe it's the strength in depth, or I don't know. I'm not worried. I'm not feeling super confident, and I think that's probably reflected amongst the other Ashley Core fans.
What was the Liga Cup final like?
Not great, really. Stood on the touchline in the corner of the Wolfsburg Arena. Never really felt in danger, and had a few half chances, but nothing much. I tell you what was really, really noticeable. And now, see, Julian's just woken up again, and he's got some comments because he was Alexey Eremenko, who was. I mean, he's a very good footballer, and his passing is just incredible. But he was playing so deep, and he would sometimes pick the ball up from the centre-backs. He's playing this quarterback role, you know, that Beckham did in his later life, and pinging immaculate passes out wide to the wings. And sometimes the player that they were aimed at actually got the ball under control, but then there was nothing. There was no kind of final ball in or whatever. And I'd like to see him playing much further forward. He's got lots of younger players around him. He was moving around, but he was moving around very slowly. And I'd rather he played up front, played that link between a younger, more energetic midfield and Roope Riski up front, and do his magic there in that area, sort of just in front of the penalty box. That's kind of the thing that really stood out on that day for us. And of course, he's coming back to, you know, hopefully into better fitness, pre-season training, and getting into playing regular games in the league will make a difference. But stay up there. Don't try and cover the whole pitch slowly. Stay in that area where you can really do some damage.
He's not a good trainer, Alexey Yeremenko. Okay. He doesn't like it. He started a lot in Kilmarnock. I think I can't remember. I think he was there four years. Can't remember, like, in his second stint, and I can't remember a season when I didn't see the headline: Alexey needs to trim down, lose weight, and get back into shape before we can consider him for the team. I mean, he always at Kilmarnock. He always in his kind of semi prime. He always got into the team, but at the start of every season, he was always in the same slightly rotund shape.
And
so, but what about the fans? I mean, what about in the stands? I mean, so SEC aren't scoring as much as often, as regularly as they were at the end of last season? Are fans happy, worried, concerned?
Julian's just made the comment that the... And I'll paraphrase. Oh, I don't think that Atletico win this season, but they're still better than last year as a team. The League Cup final was not very good. And that neither team really created anything much in the final. I don't think people are worried. It's a bit difficult because there's been a few home games in the Liga Cup inside. There's not that many people there really in those games. We don't have a stand yet because the new stadium is still being constructed, and we haven't had the first home game league game of the season yet. That comes next Thursday. I think. A little bit concerned with the things that I've said. That would seem to be the general feeling, and hopeful that maybe I've sort of articulated the things that we've been talking about, that as the season comes, they'll start to get. There's a lot of players come in still, a lot of players still to sort of gel together. Defensively looks good. Herme, Kane, Mate, all come in and strengthened. It's just the creativity thing at the moment. It's not quite happening.
Yeah. So, Rich, you fancy Esiko or Hoyiko?
I go for Esiko just. I think I know Hoyiko underperformed so much last season, and this was that was the lowest title-winning points tally for ages. But I think... Risky once he gets going, I think, will be more consistent, and I think he'll get enough goals that, you know, I think once they get into the new stadium and once that gets out of the way, and I know Julian mentioned that Atletico sometimes struggle playing indoors anyway, I think, you know, now they've had a bit of time to play outside. Tonight the cup game was played outdoors. I think once the season gets going, you know, they'll start. Hoyiko, I like the look of them, but I just don't see them.
I don't think they're any better now than when they ended last season. If I'm totally honest, I think maybe they're a bit better because they've got maybe Miklu who can finish. But I don't think they're that good. If Tanaka and if Morelas become the players that they should be, then they might win the league. But I don't think they're... I mean, I don't think that they're better. I don't think Rops are better. I think it's a really strange one for me. I don't think even Esiko are that much better than they were last year because of the way that they're playing. But I think they'll be more...
at the back. I mean, they've tightened up there and bought some strength and some class with Herme.
Well... Simo Valakari's not naive. He'll be looking essentially basically at European competition and thinking, I can't go into that with the same back line that I had last year. I need to be able to go to Reykjavik and keep a clean sheet. They'd like when eventually they get drawn against an Icelandic team. but I mean I think that's essentially the kind of issue. He's looking at European and the next step and pushing them forward. So they're roughly about where they were last year. And I think, yeah, Hoyiko maybe even are probably not as strong as they were when they ended last season.
I just wanted, before we move on to any other teams, the message board's just gone nuts. And they're all talking about everything other than the three teams that we've been talking about so far. So it's very difficult to keep track of what you guys are saying. We seem to be talking about the championship contenders, and they're all talking about relegation, which is...
Relegation is, in fairness, a lot more interesting this year. Because I think you look at somebody like Ilves, and I reckon Ilves will go down with fair PS because I can't see them scoring a lot of goals. But somebody like even PS Kemi came up, and by rights they should run out of steam by about July, August, and should probably go back down, with all respect to PS Kemi, even though they didn't send me a shirt. they should go. I'd take any shirt really, but they should go back down. But I think because Ilves are struggling, Coops are struggling, EFK Mariehamn are struggling. There's a lot of teams sort of down there that could go.
Yeah, I mean, I said last month I think Coops will struggle. I know they've signed some Nigerian B internationals or whatever they are, but they just seem the last couple of years to have just died on their. I was going to say a naughty word.
Backside.
But when they've signed Aritalo, who looks like their most experienced goal threat, and they've got the 19-year-old kid who used to be in Hansen on the wing. I think I fear for them, to be honest. But like you say, I mean, there's probably six or seven teams who a push could be involved in the bottom two or three.
The message board seems to think that Coops should be okay, that Mariehamn should be okay. Nobody's said anything about your suggestions so far. Come on, message board, let us know. Who do you really think is going to go down?
We'd laugh at Fernando Torres has just scored a goal. But...
Oh, the message board...
Against Barca?
Yeah.
Ilves will go down, I think, for sure. And I think that... So I had VPS to go down with them as well as Julian does. Oh, no, if Julian says VPS will be okay... I got them to go down because they relied on Juha Mäkelä last season. He scored about half their goals. And I think without those goals, they would have been bottom of the table very easily last year. I can't see Morrissey getting them. I do like Puru Soiri. If he gets a chance, I kind of hope he gets a chance. But then a relegation fight is a very difficult place for a 19-year-old. That being said, if he can score goals, then I'll be very happy.
And does anyone have anything else to add to this Veikkausliiga preview?
No, I don't think anything that hasn't already been said, or I could do some plugs for my season preview, or the predictions, or the transfer page, or the...
Fashion, the shirt preview.
Yeah, that was actually the most popular one.
I think that's a good point, Rich. You have kind of got quite a bit of other additional... material covering some of these, and we seem to have touched on the top, started in the middle, went to the top, we touched relegation. We've been talking for well over an hour now, and the people watching has grown, the chat board has perked up. Let's see what we're saying here. Elias is saying Hoyiko, Asiko, Inter and Lahti are safe. After that, anything can happen. Ilves are huge favourites to go down. Coops is a big question mark, and also Kemi. And Hifki might also struggle this year. So that is four at the top okay, four at the bottom in trouble, and that leaves four in the middle. Julian says, what about Rops?
I mean, they'll be fine. I think they've lost so many key players, either through transfers or obviously Okkonen being injured, and I'm sure Mark will touch on the Yagubi as well, but they won't go down, they won't struggle, but they're not going to get second.
Rob Taylor looked good. I mean, it was a good goal, but I think the keeper should have probably handled it a lot better, but in general he played very well in the middle of the pitch. He was quite creative, didn't lose the ball a lot. I like the look of Rob Taylor.
Where did he come from, Mark?
Kuopio.
Oh, okay.
he's a Finnish under 21.
Ah, okay.
Pikkuhukkoja.
He was a Juve scholar, wasn't he?
Yeah, Jijiko. I was going to say JJK. Something kicked in my brain.
I'm sure, if I remember, he once was on the books of Barnet.
Right. Okay. But,
I think. Yeah, it could be Barnet, Leighton Orient, somewhere like that. I'm not sure. Yeah. Probably Barnet, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, and as you're a Geordie, Mark, we'll let you get away with saying Leighton Orient and Barnet as kind of, somewhere in the same area. All those from Eastern North London will be going nuts.
Let's face it, Mark, for you and me, it's all down south.
From here, yeah, that's true.
Of course,
that's true. Almost everything down south from here.
It's all down south.
Okay, well then maybe that's time to wrap it up. Message board guys, thank you so much for being busy. It's now flooding in. I can't even keep up with it. I think Jules has run out of words, which is fine. We've almost run out of words as well.
He's going for it.
Rich just mentioned some of his recent articles. There's an article on escapetosuomi.com showing all the new kits this year for the Veikkausliiga teams. I think a generally pretty uninspired bunch, really.
What?
Yeah, well, I think...
Come on! Okay,
Rich, show us your shirt. You've been sitting there in your new shirt all day.
I've got the, PK35.
Model, you yes, know so. What I mean.
Not the best light. Yeah.
On the catwalk. Yeah, on the catwalk. On the catwalk, yeah.
After the rant, we've now got the singing.
I don't know what happened.
But, yeah, I think that kit one was the most popular, purely because... One, I somehow managed to discover that Lahti could fit an even bigger sponsor in the middle, and it was Kemi changing from a very interesting, apparently custom-made shirt to something that looked like it belonged in a bargain bin at a car wash. yeah, that was a pain.
And then you've also got your predictions article that came out today, and you've got a general season preview as well. So they're well worth checking out. And I think on fcsuomi.com there was a post-mortem, shall we call it, from the international games.
The last update on the site is a roundup of the action last weekend. So which was a bit of an international hangover in that most of the players returned to their domestic leagues and very few of them did very well. A lot of them, I mean, like guys like Joona Toivio-Paulisaari, after playing two games in 3-4 days, didn't feature well, didn't play well. So it was about how they performed after, how they're doing in general.
And you also had Rich, you had an interview with Archie, the Hoyerscore fan that is seen at the top of your Twitter feed falling on his head from the stand, which is a staggering picture. And it's interesting to be able to speak of that.
Well, funny enough, I've not actually met him, but I know a couple of people who have and said he's a character, I think is the nicer way to put it. To be honest, I've done so many interviews over the winter that, you know, some have been better than others. And, you know, my favorite recent one was Sebastian Strandvall. And I've done some that have just been one word answers, but no, this was good. You know, he was the guy who was pictured on his own in the end in Kazakhstan when Hoyerscore played out there. You know, he fell on his head and claimed he was sober at the time. also, which got him in my good books, was he said he was an Arsenal fan and hoped that Hoyerscore would draw Arsenal in the Champions League at some point. But, you know, I think his imagination was getting the better of him then.
He's an optimist, and all true football fans are optimists for their team.
Yeah, you've got to be. But, that was a good one. And, he was actually quite critical of some parts of Hoyerscore, which was interesting because... you know, some of the issues around the game they played against Liverpool last year. He had his trip booked to Mariehamn for the game that was postponed to accommodate that friendly. And some interesting suggestions about, you know, how clubs could engage with their fans better, which, you know, and even Hoyerscore, who are probably the most open marketed club in the country, you know, he's given some quite honest feedback about them as well.
Perfect. Thanks very much. For those that are watching live, if you want to listen to this again, if you joined us late and you want to listen to the whole thing over, Alicante, you missed Mark's rant and it's well worth catching. So, you know, check out the podcast. It'll be coming in a few days' time. Thanks to everyone that joined us. Thanks to those listening on the podcast. We love you all equally, some more equally than others. And we'll be going off the record now. Remember, if you want to find out what fascinating stuff goes on when we go off the record, then you have to tune in live. For those listening on the podcast, I'm afraid This is your lot. Here comes the theme tune. Yep.